Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody in the franchising world and franchising community, this is Paul Segreto on the Franchise Today Show, joined by my ever-loving co-host from the city of Cleveland, Ohio, the home of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the foot of Lake Erie, Joel Labava, the Franchise King. Joel, how are you today?
Oh, fantastic. Thank you very much. I've never heard of the phrase, the foot of Lake Erie, but we'll take it, I think.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to use a little bit of my geography intellect, if you would. Anyway, we got an exciting show today, Joel, talking about franchising and the three C's, the current credit crunch, which, of course, as we know, might be exacerbated by the current and recent bankruptcy filing of CIT that so many franchise organizations are so reliant and dependent upon. The one good thing is that they dodged a big bullet by already having a lot of the Christmas and holiday orders already in place because, from my understanding, there was over 300,000 franchise outlets from coast to coast that rely on CIT financing for their Christmas orders. So it looks like those went through, but the first quarter of next year could be precarious. But before we get into that, why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on in the franchise blogging world?
I sure will. We take this from Guy Kawasaki's alltop.com franchising. And the first thing comes up on a franchise chat. Gary Wilkerson's been around a long, long time in the world of franchising. He writes pretty well. He writes really long, and his articles are super long, but they're very good. And he was talking about the topic he wanted to talk about. Let's be honest about franchising, and will franchising help to lead the U.S. out of the Great Recession? Now, that sounds like kind of an IFA member kind of stance. Yes, franchising is going to do it, and yada, yada, yada. And the IFA, as we mentioned before, does a lot of really good stuff. But I don't think that the franchising world will take us out of the recession. Franchising is a pretty large part of our economy. But what will take us out of the recession, one of the things that will obviously will be what we're going to talk about today, and that is getting some of these banks to open their vaults. Unlock those bad boys, because without startup businesses, that could really impact how everything starts to recover next year. And I hope it does. Some unemployment news came out today. That unemployment last week, the job claims went down for the first time in a while. Having said that, the news story about unemployment has to do with 50 states, and all 50 states are hurting, but some more than others, and there could be some employee layoffs to the tune of 90,000 people early next year that work for the state governments all over our country, from Alaska to Hawaii. So there's going to be a lot more people in the unemployment lines next year unless the states can get their budgets handled. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and I don't know if franchising is going to be a home run when it gets going to help the economy, but it certainly will help. Did you have a chance to look at a couple paragraphs in that article, Paul?
Yeah, I saw that. It was interesting. I agree. I wonder how much franchising will actually be part of it. But it's my understanding that with all the TARP money that was given to the banks and financial institutions last year, only 15% of it was actually put back into the economy. And 85% of it was actually left in the coffers to generate interest, which really makes me wonder how much the government missed the boat by not putting some restrictions onto the use of that money, and that if they didn't use the money, the interest should have went back to the taxpayers, as opposed to in the bank's pockets. I mean, hey, if somebody wants to park $45 billion in my bank account, I'll be more than happy to hold on to it for a year and take the interest, and then I'll pay you back with no interest. I think that's a great no-brainer.
You know what? You could be right. And I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, but rumor on the street is that one of the reasons that the banks are really, really hesitant to loan money is because internally there's a lot of bad paper still on their books, and they just are not comfortable opening the books up more. And so I don't know. Maybe we can have someone really, really close to the financial industry talk with us one of these weeks, because obviously this is not going to be settled in the next 2 or 3 weeks. It's a big problem, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But I can tell you, I think that the credit crunch impacts franchising more than anything right now. So we'll talk about that a little later. But anyway, there's an interesting article, and I welcome you to read it, franchise.chat.com. And you'll find their article section. I don't know if they call it an official blog or not, but they call it their article section. And just look for Jerry Wilkerson's article, Let's Be Honest About Franchising. It's a pretty good one. Another one I found, this is pretty cool, over at Franchise Direct out of Ireland. They have a U.S. site. And full disclosure, I do some stuff with them. And The Power of the Franchisee is pretty cool. It's a story about a Subway franchisee by the name of Stuart Frankel, who was featured in Business Week magazine. And he was the guy that came up with the $5 foot-long subs, and every town and every market now has those. Pretty cool stuff. Once in a while, a franchisee or a franchisee advisory council, if there is one, if the franchisor is progressive enough and big enough, can make an impact and help introduce some products or services. But when I do my seminars on franchising live, when I do them in front of a crowd, I always use Subway as an example of a system that is really pretty rigid. And, I mean, if you have an idea for a recipe once in a while, or an idea once in a while, it might fly. But in general, you're not going to go to a you're not going to buy a franchise of Subway, go to training, and reteach folks how to make sandwiches. Because, well, if we put the cheese on top before the ham, we're going to save 1.4 seconds. Guess what? They don't want to hear about it. It's a 300-page operations manual. Here's how to make the sandwich. Here's how to do this. Here's how to turn off the lights, because that's, after all, what you're paying for in a franchise, a system. So anyway, I thought that was kind of a cool article. Once in a while, we do hear about a franchisee or two who has made a big impact on a franchise system. When you were a franchisee, did any of your ideas ever fly?
Yeah, a few of them, and a lot of that had to do with out-of-the-box marketing that we talked about last week, about the different things we did with direct mail and how we got into the community and actually did some speaking engagements that they ran with. Well, you know, also, you know, from Subway standpoint, the Jared spokesperson was actually first put out there by a franchisee. And then as there was success, the franchisor ran with it. So, yeah, there are a lot of great ideas that come out of the franchise systems themselves. I mean, those are the guys working in the trenches. They see what works. They see what their customer, what lights up the customer's mind, and they run with it. I mean, I always get it mistaken, whether it be the Egg McMuffin or the Big Mac. I know one was made, was invented by a franchisee, and the other one was the thought of a franchise executive or a franchise marketing executive. But again, you know, a lot of times it doesn't come out of the boardrooms. It comes out of the trenches.
That's right. That's right. I know when I was with a large brokerage organization that actually was a franchise, but they never really admitted to it. Now they are, though, because they're selling franchises. They didn't really take a lot of our ideas sometimes to heart. And it was really unfortunate, because especially when it came to marketing, some of us had some really, really good ideas, and it just never flies. So it gets frustrating. And yeah, I don't know about you, but I have certainly found out that for me anyway, for this dude, I am not a suitable candidate for any franchise. I've never really been one to follow the system. I fight the system. I try to reinvent it. and it's not for me. You are probably a little more mellow at times than I am, and you were a franchisee longer than I was. So, you know, let me ask you this. If you had an opportunity to get into the ground floor of a really, really cool franchise that you thought was a fit and that you could really rock and roll in Houston, would you do it?
As a franchisee, I'm assuming you're asking, right?
Yes, yes, as a franchisee, not as a Segretto.
You know, probably, probably if it was such a upstart and I was one of the first franchisees that can help mold the concept, because I think I'm too entrepreneurial to buy into a system with a 400-page operation manual.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
made me have to do everything exactly the way they wanted to. And, you know, I've often written about it, and others have too, you know, are franchisees really entrepreneurs? And I think some are, because they do take a risk, although it's a more calculated risk, as opposed to starting it on their own. But I think when you, you know, I think that's that fine line in franchising that I refer to as the ROI make a living line. And it's the QSR franchises that are out there that franchisees are looking more at return on investment. They're looking to build a large organization with different layers of management, and they want multiple locations, and their only goal is to look at that P&L report and look at their return on investment. Where the make a living line are a lot of the smaller QSR franchises, as well as all the ones in the service and product and retail segments of franchising, where they might be franchisees that are replacing a job, looking at it as a career alternative, looking at it as a way of achieving their wishes, hopes, and dreams. And, you know, they're looking to eke out a living. Maybe they might get a second or third location, but it's more to still operate on a day-to-day basis. And I think those individuals are less entrepreneurial and are more apt to follow the system than somebody that is more entrepreneurial.
I could see you getting into a really, really young franchise organization if you were one of the first. But it would have to be a franchise organization, as you said, that wouldn't be too rigid. And those are pretty hard to find, even the young ones, because, you know, it's their ego and their sweat and their $150,000 or so to get the thing rocking and rolling. So, I don't know, it could go either way, but I could definitely see you becoming a franchisee way before this guy.
Well, I think part of the problem, too, in becoming a franchisee and an upstart, at least for me, is being so entrepreneurial, I would probably be butting heads with the founder of the company who is also entrepreneurial, and sometimes those two personalities are so alike that they don't get along, because each one of us wants to have the idea before the other. And sometimes two entrepreneurial personalities meet and they do well together, but it's usually because they have complementing skills. Mine might be from a sales and marketing side, and somebody else's might be from the financial side and has the financial vision, and you put the two together, and sometimes that's where a team works.
Huh. Okay. We can go with that. So what's up in Houston, man?
What's up in Houston? Sunny day, a little bit on the warm side, no rain. It's been Chamber of Commerce weather here for sure. But, you know, I've been doing a lot of work online as of late, more than I have. I guess I'm kind of picking up from my two-week sabbatical with the flu. And I noticed you had posted something about our show, the Bagel and Pasta Hour. And I wanted to let everybody know to go to your site, see what the Franchise King has to say. And make everybody aware that, you know, podcasts are available on demand, and you can get them through Joel's site and my site. We get a lot of people that download and listen on the weekend. You know, another thing, too, I posted, and I know you have too, Joel, about exploring franchise opportunities, Q&A, get the answers you need. I know both of us have similar thoughts regarding this. You know, hey, if anybody's looking at a franchise, look at Joel's site. Look at his ebook. I think it'll really help you put together the questions that are necessary and that you need. I have a brief article on it, certainly not an ebook like Joel's. You know, Joel, also, I've been in touch with Megan Erickson of the Dickinson Law Firm, who's come out with a blog, Erickson's blog, on social networking and the law. Yep. Our buddies over at Rush on Business promoted this site as well. I've got
a couple weeks ago.
I got a post on my blog site about it. Megan has agreed to be a guest author on my site. She's really got some fabulous insight into social networking and the law. And then also, Lizette Pirtle, that you and I have both spoken with, came out with a new book, Franchise Success, The New Formula. There's a link on my site where you could put in Franchise Essentials number one. It's listed on the site as your gift promotion password. And Lizette's been kind enough to offer a complimentary e-copy for anybody that goes through the site. And that's why I'd like to promote it today, some on Franchise Today. Well, Joel, talking about the credit crunch, you know, and I think I brought up a good point that we should run with, in that I said myself, I would be good to partner up with somebody that's more astute from the financial side and has that vision, because I have the entrepreneurial vision of marketing and thinking outside the box. And when you put the two together, it is a good mix. And I think, and maybe I'm jumping ahead, as franchise candidates are looking at more and more financial opportunities, or lending opportunities, I should say, in order to get into a business and specifically into a franchise, that I think there's going to be more partnering up. And I foresee in the future that there are going to be organizations, maybe they're brokers, maybe somebody's going to run with this idea, that instead of partnering up specifically an individual with a franchise or a business, maybe profiling partners, and then take those partners' personality and focus them in on a franchise, because it's going to double their credit qualifications, possibly double their investment potential, possibly double their cash outlay and things they're able to tap. And maybe banks, as they are being more cautious, would look at two individuals better than they would look at one, at least until we get out of this credit crunch. I think it's an interesting concept that needs to be looked at.
But, Paul, they'd have to make twice as much money because they'd be supporting two people.
Okay, but if part of their business plan was to have two locations, they can get the first one up and running and get into the second, and then complement each other, oversee two, with the hope of being able to make enough income for two. And maybe that takes a little bit more of an entrepreneurial spirit, but I think there's a lot to be said of partnering up the right people. And I don't see a lot of businesses focusing on partnering up the right people, because, you know, Joel, you and I have talked a lot about franchise failure, franchisee failure. And a lot of times, it's, you know, it might be an HR executive who's a VP at a company and knows the world about HR, but doesn't understand anything about marketing. He gets into a franchise, And all of a sudden, he doesn't understand marketing, and that's a reason he might fail. Maybe it's time that we partner up some people, and maybe people need to take a look at maybe their expectations need to be a little bit less on the first location until they get up and running, but they can complement each other, and maybe they can come up and running a lot faster.
Well, it's not an uninteresting idea.
Well, let me interrupt you real quick, Joe.
Yeah.
I'm a great interrupter. Hey, I started the Franchise Essential Show on Blog Talk Radio, and it was myself, okay? And you weren't involved in it at the time. But you know what? Partnering up with you has complemented the things that I'm good at, along with the things that you're good at, and has made it a much better show today than I could have ever done on my own. The same thing needs to be true to franchise businesses.
Well, that was very nice of you. I'm touched. Well, according to my daughter and my wife, I'm superbly touched. But thank you. No, you know what? Here's what I remember my father saying. He told me that, Joel, you know, when you're talking with franchise candidates and they bring up that word partner, tell them, first of all, that they really, really need to think it through. And the second thing they need to do is immediately, once they decide they found a, quote, partner, get to a lawyer and write a partner agreement up. Because when they get to a lawyer, that is where the rubber meets the road. Because the spouses are going to have to get involved with their spouses, and they're going to have to learn about each other's financial situations and get it all up front. And if they can go far enough down the road to at least get a legal document up and running that they're a real partnership, then you might have something. But, I mean, Paul, how many people have you and I met with over the years that have said, well, I'm thinking about partnering with a da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, and they didn't even talk to the person. So they have to really take it through.
I think a big reason is, number one, a lot of people form partnerships because they were friends.
Right.
And they most of the time might be similar in personalities.
Right.
And the partnerships seem that have worked well is when they're a complementing personality.
Yes.
Sure,
they
get along, but they're a complementing personality. One might be better operationally, the other might be better.
Right.
You know, I mean, you see this all the time in kitchens, you know, in restaurants. You know, a great partnership is when you have one guy that knows the back of the house and one guy that knows the front of the house.
I worked in those situations. I worked at restaurants like that.
Now, I think the key is, and I think you're 100% right in getting themselves to an attorney and putting together a document and putting together a plan. But what's often missed, because nobody wants to even touch this subject up front, is make sure you define an exit strategy. Make sure you define parts of the agreement that say, if our capital runs to this point, who's going to be responsible for contributing? And if none of us are, where are we going to get it? And if we can't get it, what are we going to do to get out of the business? And it might be, and I tell this to individual franchisees too, prepare your exit strategy, a voluntary strategy and an involuntary strategy. And this has to do with not keeping your head in the sand, knowing up front, if I hit this stage, what am I going to do? If I'm forced here because my capital drops and my revenue has dropped, what do I do? Because by not doing so, you're going to head into disaster. So make sure you have exit strategies in place up front initially.
That is a good point. You know what? Even folks that aren't partnering need to think about, you know, what's going to happen in 5 or 10 years? What is the plan? What do I want to do? So that's very good advice.
The same advice needs to go to franchisors. If your goal and objectives are to be a franchisor and you get up and running and you sell your first franchises, and then all of a sudden you realize those first 5 franchises aren't making any money, stop. Look at what you need to do in order to turn it around. Don't keep trying to add on to the pie.
But how many do that, Paul? How many do that?
None.
Right. And they fail. And then our industry gets the black eye. Oh, I bought a franchise, and they ended up opening 5 or 10 of them, and they closed down. You know?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's the reason, you know, getting back to the credit crunch and getting back to lenders being overly cautious, it's because they got burned on a lot of these things. And like you said, they've got a lot of bad paper still on the books. And I think as people are looking at getting into a business and trying to borrow money, make sure your business plan is as comprehensive as possible. Make sure to point out what your exit strategy is just in case. I think the lender will be more optimistic or at least feel that you've thought this out, and it may help, even if it's one step further, it may help get the loan. Now, you talk about bad paper on the books. You know, something that is off has not been discussed a lot is what's going on and what may be going on in the commercial real estate industry where a lot of our franchise locations are tied to. And the government has come up with new formula and new direction as to how to classify bad paper on the books. And their financial razzmatazz and magic are now taking stuff that was might have been considered underperforming and bad paper in the past, and they're trying to extend that out so that there's more active paper on the books, which, of course, makes all the bean counters real happy and may open up some of the financing. Because if something isn't done, and I hope, because I've got family in commercial real estate, but I hope I'm wrong in this, I think the ripple effect is going to be, you know, we see the biggest amount of commercial property vacancies come on after the holiday season because everybody tries to hang on for the holiday season or at least cut their losses. But come January through March, I think we're going to see an increase in vacancies in commercial properties, retail outlets, and I think that's going to be detrimental to franchising. Until the next wave of franchise sales and franchise development and financing comes together to bring in the next wave of entrepreneurs. But more than ever, if the commercial real estate industry does not do something quickly, that might even be worse than what's going on in the residential housing market today.
Well, you know, you bring that up, and then that is the next big headache for our country is this commercial real estate market. I don't know how it is in Houston, but at least on the east side here in Cleveland in the suburbs, you can go down a couple of the main drags, and you're talking 20-25% vacancy in some of these strip centers. And here's what I'm hearing. Now, I hope that a commercial real estate person contacts me. I'm certainly easy to find and tells me something different, but I'm hearing that the landlords are really not that enthusiastic about lowering their square foot pricing, even though there's some vacancy. Are you hearing that where you're at?
Well, you know, I'm hearing something different, and it's only because of a personal experience. We were toying around with opening a sports bar and grill that I had once before, and there's a new location that we were looking at, and it's an ideal anchor location at the front of a shopping center. It's an end cap. It's got front view, side view to the interstate. And when it became available, the realtor, the agent called me, and I went and looked at it, and he was very proud to say $30 a square foot plus $3 triple net for the lease. And I told him, "You're crazy." I said, "You're nuts if you think that a business of this size and of this type can afford that type of rent every month." Well, you know, he kind of bowed up his chest and said, well, you know, that's what we're looking for. We might negotiate a little bit. I said, well, when you decide on sharpening your pencil, give me a call. And
yeah.
Here it was, you know, 4 weeks later, and I get an email from him and said, would you consider $22 a square foot? That's an $8 a square foot drop from where it was 4 weeks earlier, which is huge. I mean, it's, you know, that's like 30%. So it tells me that, you know, they might be seeing a domino effect that's putting them into survival mode, which is no different than franchisors selling a franchise to somebody because they're waving a check around. Right at
that
point.
Don't exaggerate now.
Yeah, I'm not exaggerating. Come on, franchisers. Anybody out there that didn't sell a franchise just because the franchise candidate had the money and he was ready to go?
And breathing.
Right. All right, everybody can put their hands down.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrific.
Did you say terrific or horrific?
No, horrific, both. Well, you know, you and I might upset the apple cart or not to change that in the future if we just keep pounding away. And
one thing I have seen, Joel, and I'm excited about this.
Yeah.
Of late, I have been in touch with and negotiating with a handful of franchise companies that are, I guess, more or less mature, maybe emerging to mature. They're certainly not startups. They've seen the growth in franchising. They reap the benefits. They've seen the downturn. But these organizations are making an investment operationally and in their training and in technology. And three of them that I spoke with this week all said, in anticipation of another resurgence in franchising that might be 2, 4, 5 years away. But they're taking a backseat to franchise sales, which I am really happy to hear from some of the groups, and perfecting their system a little bit more with the intent on moving forward so it's stronger for their current franchisees and for the next wave of franchise candidates. And I think that's been missed over the past year because I don't think anybody realized or thought that it was possible that this downturn would last as long as it did, and they were just hanging on. Instead of putting money into and resources and time or whatever you want to call it, into perfecting the system so that franchisees, you know, can make a little bit more money and people will buy into the system when the timing is right. This is a square hole they can't stick a round peg into. It has to be when the timing is right, but they need to do something in the meantime to support the franchisees and make the system better, even despite the economic downturn.
It's interesting that you bring that up because my upcoming article on small business trends, where I also am doing some community promotional work, I'm writing about, and I'm composing it. I started it this morning, and it's about the very thing you just mentioned. You know, I think, and obviously you think, that the unit, that franchise units will probably not be sold as fast as they used to. And 2010, you know, could be an average year for sales, but it is the time for franchisors to, you know, maybe add another field rep or two and get out there and talk to the franchisees and see how you can increase the franchisees' own unit sales. And there's a lot of ways to do it. You know, whether it's mobile marketing, regular marketing, social marketing, there's a lot of stuff they can do, a lot of promotional stuff, and there's also a lot of operational stuff internally where maybe they can cut some expenses and increase the bottom line for their franchisees, which will help the brand, and when things turn around, these franchisees will be happy and validate well.
I agree. I mean, if you look at it and you say, okay, let's say the typical franchise sells for $30,000. And let's say you have 90 franchisees. If you could get their revenue up and their bottom line up, but get their revenue up that it generates an extra $90 a month in royalties. $90 a month, Joel, only $90 a month would amount to $1,000 a year times 90 would amount to $90,000 in additional royalty. That would offset those three franchise sales they didn't make because of the down economy. On top of it, it would position the current franchise base to be more apt to validate the franchise concept when the economy does turn around and people are looking to buy franchises.
Exactly.
Only $90 a month. I sound like, you know, save a kid for only 18 cents a day. I mean, you know, that's only $3 a day.
That's true. That's true. But for some of the larger franchisors, $90 a month, is it going to really help that much? I mean, they're looking for, you know, an increase of $1 million or $1.5 million in royalties.
I understand that. It all works out progressively. I mean, you know, if you've got 1,000 locations and it's an extra $200 a month, I mean, you know, start running the math. But my point is, it really does get down to a fundamental level. But here's the problem. That takes planning, Joel. As opposed to sitting around with our thumb up you know where, saying 4 or 5 months into it, geez, we haven't sold a franchise in 5 months. Well, you know, now you're down $30,000, $60,000, $90,000, and it's hard to recover, as opposed to going into it with planning. You know, and all of this that we've talked about today, whether it be finances, whether it be partnerships, whether it be about putting together business, all of this together comes down to one word, which is planning. You know, and I think that, you know, franchisors need to spend a little bit more time on their strategic plans and putting a practical, realistic plan into action and following it. Don't let it go 6 months and then scratch your head or something else and say, hey, you know, this didn't work. You know, monitor it like you do your P&L. I mean, one of the things I do on the social media side is I've come up with a social media P&L. You know, look at it across the board as you would a P&L. This is your strategic planning P&L. Don't wait 6 months to figure out something is wrong or awry. Do it on a week-by-week basis. What are we trying to achieve this week? What are we trying to achieve next week? We're not doing it. Do we need to tweak? Do we need to revise? Do we need to throw this part out? We need to adjust. I mean, everybody says they're sitting around. There's no franchise sales. There's nothing to do. Well, then do something.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, you and I can say what we want on our radio show. And it is easy for us because we are not franchisors right now. And it is easy for us to say, you guys and gals need to do this. But you know what? Sometimes there's franchisors out there who've been going through some pretty good pain the last 12, maybe 18 months, who are, quite frankly, sick of spending money and want to see some franchise sales. So I can understand the other side of the coin where some of the executives might say, you know what? These guys are full of it. They're not in the trenches like us. You know, they haven't spent $60,000, $80,000 in the last year just on a new initiative, and nothing's happening. So it's easy for them to say, strategize, you know, hire a couple more field reps, spend some more time with your franchisees. You know, we need some sales. We need these $30,000 checks. So, I mean, there's two sides of the coin. Now, in a perfect world, a franchisor at the beginning gets a good ethical franchise development company, and the franchise development company kind of stays with them and reminds them, by the way, all the signs are that the economy's going down for a while. Franchise sales may decrease. What are you guys going to do? You know, what can you do? And if you're a franchisor that's hurting right now, social media is pretty darn inexpensive. You don't have to go to New York City and get a huge advertising agency and spend $3 million on a budget of whatever it is they tell you to do and do all this branding and magazine article and all. You don't have to do that anymore. You know, social media is very, very inexpensive, and you can get the word out faster now. So I think we should be careful.
I mean, obviously, you know, doing as much work as I do and we do in social media, I agree that it's a very cost-effective approach. But going back to what you're saying about, you know, franchisors and there's two sides of the coin, I agree. But, you know, Joel, if you hold the coin in your hand and you turn it over and over and over in your hand, it's got balance. It weighs the same. And I think that's the problem. The problem in the past that when people were buying franchises at a record rate, too much emphasis was put on that side of the coin, making it weigh heavier on one side of the coin. And I think what the lesson that should be learned is that there needs to be balance. And you don't just change directions completely. You tweak it a little bit, and it's balanced. And again, the only way you would know that is by having a plan in action and following it and tweaking it from the get-go, as opposed to having to make a drastic change somewhere down the road. And I think that's what's missing, not only in franchise, but in any small business. And my own included, there's too many times that I haven't done the necessary planning. And, you know, that's the alligator that came up and bit me you know where. It's because the planning wasn't there and I didn't have the roadmap to follow that when I got off course, I knew the way back to the main road.
Yes, and here's what I always tell my wife, Paul, and you'll like this, and you're 100% right, but you can plan plans, but you can't plan results. And sometimes I think that executives, whether in franchising or in non-franchise small business, sometimes the blinders are on. And if you didn't see this coming, I don't know what newspapers and what online media sites you're not reading, but this isn't, you know, this isn't exactly new news.
Well,
you know,
it's
been tough for a while.
Yeah, I think the distinguishing factor is whether it's blinders on or the head is in the sand.
Yeah, we can go with that. You're right.
You know, I think the thing is, too, and I think we all fall into this, and I'll stick my name right out there at the top of the list.
Please do.
Nature to take shortcuts. And
yep.
I think... because you take the path of least resistance, you take the shortest. I mean, how many times has someone been stuck in traffic and said, well, I could go down this street, make a left here, go behind the school, behind the shopping center, and I can wind up there, only to find out that it takes a lot longer. But we're looking for the path of least resistance, the shortest way there. And I think in franchise shortcuts, you know, I pointed out, you know, 9 franchise shortcuts that have hurt franchising and will continue to hurt franchising unless improvements are made. Number one, would you mind, Joel, if I gave my list of 9?
I would actually prefer, and I think the listeners would prefer if you gave 7.
If I gave 7? All right,
yes,
well then
I think
7's going to have an A and a B.
Okay, that's cool.
All right, I'm going to give you a 9. Number one.
Okay.
Unqualified franchisors. 2, unprepared franchisors. 3, unqualified franchise candidates. 4, inadequate training. 5, inadequate support. 6, poor attention to detail. 7, poor attention to the business itself. 8, head in the sand attitude. 9, finger pointing. Everybody wants to blame everybody else.
Yes. Go on.
That was it. That was 9.
Okay, but you said 9. I thought you said 8 A and B.
No, I said if you only wanted me to give 7, then the last one was going to have 2 subtitles of A and B. I still had
I
to give
understand.
You 9.
I don't understand you.
Okay.
I just don't understand. Go ahead.
Anyway, you know, we need to look at it and say, are we really shortcutting it, or are we really in it for the long term? And I think that if it's long term, it needs to be a well-thought-out strategic plan that needs to be followed and you need to be practical and realistic with. I've been on both sides of the coin, franchisee and franchisor, and I'm saying the same things that I've said in the past. People have asked me, what would I do differently today if I was running a franchise organization? And the bottom line is, before franchise sales, before anything else, it would be drive business to your franchise locations. Do everything possible to drive business there. Number one, it'll create a happier franchisee. Number two, it'll greatly affect his bottom line. Three, it'll increase royalties for the corporate office. Four, it'll open up the lines of communications because everybody likes to communicate when they're happy. And five, most importantly, if your goal is franchise sales, it will help a validation process of validating the franchise when franchise candidates are looking to buy. And it's a nice, neat circle that gets closed up very nicely, and it'll work in that environment. Spend your time driving business to the franchise locations, and everything else should take care of itself.
Okay. I like those. That's good stuff, man. And a couple of those you and I talk about all the time, and that is the unqualified franchisors and unqualified franchisees. Why is this so hard? I don't understand.
I don't know, Joe. I mean, we're in a greedy world. I'm sure we've all been guilty of that at one time or another. But some people are more greedy than others. And we'll, again, you know, go back to take the path of least resistance. I mean, how many times do we hear of a company that's got a good concept, they want a franchise, and the first thing they want to do is nickel and dime, you know, the disclosure documents and the operations manual. Oh, well, we can get a couple of franchisees, and then those franchise sales will help pay for this other stuff. And it never does. It all winds up in a vicious cycle at that point that shortchanges every step of the way and causes the franchise system to implode. And it implodes upon each other from the top floor down. And unfortunately, the franchisees that have bought into the system are the ones sitting on the ground floor as everything comes crashing down on top of them and pulverizes them into financial disaster. And you know as well as I do, Joe, I am a big proponent of franchisees being responsible for their own actions, being responsible for their business, and to be responsible enough to get off their ass and make things happen. But if there are things being shortcutted all along the way, then a lot of times they don't have a chance.
Yeah, they don't. They don't, and I really feel bad for situations like that. It's ridiculous. I think that aggravates me more than anything in franchising. People that are sold franchises that never had a chance. Never had a chance because they were the wrong fit.
You know, or, you know, you look at franchise companies, and we all know about what's going on with Curve's franchise that our buddy Sean Kelly wrote about these franchisees that have failed and now are being required and sued about a large exit amount that they have to pay after going through, you know, such a disastrous experience as a franchisee. And it seems like Curve spent so much time focusing on that as opposed to focusing on the things to make their current and their remaining franchisees more successful. Because, you know, by continuing to focus on the negative, it's just going to add more negative to it.
Yeah.
And it just, to me, is absurd. You know what? It's a failure. It's done. Be done with it, learn from it, and let's figure out how to make the remaining franchisees survive, not just sit here and look at these failed franchises as an additional source of revenue for the corporate office. Let's hold them to it. And oftentimes, it's that last straw that pushes somebody into bankruptcy or catastrophically, like we've heard in other franchise organizations, where somebody has actually put a gun in their mouth. That is horrific.
That is horrific. It's ridiculous. It starts at the top. Every organization I've ever been with, it starts at the top. It's that attitude. Is it all about money, or is it about doing the right thing? Period. No in between.
Well, I think what happens is I think genuinely a lot of people start out doing the right thing. They get into survival mode. They wind up shortcutting. They say, mañana, we'll deal with it tomorrow. And that's when the head slowly goes into the ground, into the sand, and crap happens. And I'm talking again from experience there, because that is the exact scenario I wound up going through. And it takes communicating, and it takes people talking with each other, and it takes everybody, you know, again, we go back to that interdependent relationship scenario that is so vital in this franchise, in franchising as we know it. I mean, people, you know, we call it a family. I hear time after time after time franchisors say, we want you as a franchisee to be part of the family. We're all one family. Well, God, this isn't how family should act. Family should act by communicating and being there and trying to work out the issues, not trying to beat somebody up over the negative when they're already closed their business, they're walking out the door, and they were saying, hey, by the way, you still owe us money, and we're going to sue the crap out of you for it. Learn from that experience and spend your resources and your time educating and supporting the other franchisees so that the air doesn't come out of the entire bubble at one time.
That's right. That is absolutely right. Unreal.
Hey, let's talk about something positive. I understand.
Yeah.
Maid Brigade has awarded their Veterans Franchise Giveaway Award. You know a little bit more about that than I do, so tell us who it was. I mean, what does this mean to him?
This is a gentleman who was in the Iraq War and came back, and it's pretty interesting. I believe he's a major. Let me just pull it up here real quick. Yes. He's actually a Bronze Star Medal winner with Valor. He has a Purple Heart, and he's got campaign medals for Kosovo and Iraq and numerous meritorious service medals. I mean, this guy, I mean, he is a decorated veteran, and he won a $45,000 Maid Brigade franchise territory and the trimmings that go with it. Major Piaget out of Crestview, Florida. There were a couple other winners also. They got some smaller territories. I understand that the response was great during the it started in July, during this contest. And you and I know, are really, really proud to be, you know, that we were part of it. And the cool thing is, one of the guys that I put in business in Maid Brigade about 6 years ago was actually one of the judges, Ray Toombs. And you did a little story on him also. So he was one of the judges. But Maid Brigade gives away couple franchises and really, really puts a thank you in for veterans. And you know what? Everyone wins. They got some nice candidates coming in, and they got the word out about their concept. You know, they're a green concept. And gosh, some veterans get to get into business. They get to come back after experiencing hell overseas, and they get to be business owners. I mean, that is good stuff. So congratulations, Major Piaget.
Now, I noticed there was some franchise awards out there. You wrote about Panchero's Mexican Grill. What was that about?
Yeah, that was an interesting one. They won a franchise award over at the, I think it was the Franchise Update get-together. And I've seen them on Twitter before, as a matter of fact. They do a lot of stuff on Twitter. They're one of the kind of the early adopters. They have almost 3,000 people following them. They're out of Iowa. I remember when Rush Nugget introduced me to them, at least via Twitter. So they won some awards on social media. Pretty good stuff. Excellence in lead generation, and I know they're using social media. I just know it. And also recruitment and industry-wide best practices in franchising. Pretty good stuff. Congratulations, Pancheros.
Awesome. You know, I know in conjunction with the IFA convention in February will be the 5th annual Franchisee Satisfaction Awards by Franchise Business Review. They're the industry's most prestigious awards honoring excellence in franchising. I mean, each year, Franchise Business Review conducts thousands of independent surveys of franchisees across the industry. The Satisfaction Awards recognize the leading franchise companies with the highest levels of overall satisfaction among their franchise operators. And I know they rate them in like 17 different industry categories, ranging from, you know, advertising and sales to home services, technology and travel and hospitality. I mean, there's a lot of different things. And they also have a top franchise within each category is honored with the Best Franchising Category Award. And additionally, they're recognized in other categories such as, you know, investment level, overall system size, improved satisfaction, and then ultimately the Franchise of the Year. That can be looked at franchisebusinessreview.com, or I do also have a link at fmdpro.com. It was posted back on November 1st. And any franchisees, I highly recommend that you go on there and vote. Now's the time to make your voice heard.
That's right. That's right. Hey, real quick, speaking of voices, you know, I was supposed to be on the FoxBusinessNews.com website today with a live video feed, and they found some more important people than me to interview, so they moved me up to Monday at, I don't know if you're up that early, but 12:35 in the afternoon Eastern time. I'm supposed to be on for 5 or 6 minutes. They told me to bring the crown, and I think we're going to talk about the credit crunch and what's going on in the real franchise world. So that should be fun. I'm kind of anxious to do that. I'll be in their online version of the live video feed. That'll be pretty cool. And if I can mention Paul Segretto, I will. And if I can't, I just won't.
There you go. Well, I will mention some things of my own. I was interviewed last week by Entrepreneur Magazine for a segment on franchising and social media. So excited about that. I'm hoping that it's supposed to be coming out in the next issue. And then I was also interviewed by Canadian Opportunity Magazine up land. Again, franchising and social media. So look for that. But, you know, we'll be posting the heck out of it as soon as we get a link, right?
Right. Of course. What other goodies? Have you been in the Houston newspaper lately?
No, I haven't.
You should be.
I can't even remember the last time I looked at a newspaper. Are they still around?
Hey, I saw a newspaper a couple weeks ago. Now, come on now. There's still people reading newspapers. You know, I have to smell
there
the
are.
Newspaper on Sunday morning. Smell the newspaper on Sunday morning is still a good smell, but I don't get a newspaper on Sunday morning. But I remember what it smells like.
Well, the thing I like about newspapers, it's much easier to carry into the bathroom than the computer.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it. I can't believe it. I mean, I can't believe it, man. Hey, thanks for having a Clevelander on the show this week again, man. This is fun, man. We should do this every week. Oh, we do. That's right. Never mind.
Now, I want to let everybody know, you know, 2 weeks from today is Turkey Day, Thanksgiving. Joe and I will take a break that day, and we will not be airing that day, but we'll pick right up the week after and take it through the end of the year, and so everybody will have a chance to enjoy their turkey without Joe and I screaming in their ears.
That's right.
And
right.
I can't think of anything else, Joel. We're getting to that point in the show where we're running out of time and coincidentally running out of things to say that won't carry us for another hour or two. So my thoughts are with everybody that might be going through a financial crunch right now. Keep your head up. That light at the end of the tunnel is not a train. It's probably a little bit of of light that will mean progress and success if you keep your nose to the grindstone and move forward. Remember the fundamentals. Remember the planning. And remember you're not in it by yourself. Hey, my email and my phone is open at all times for anybody that's got an issue or a problem in franchising that they need to discuss, and there's no charge, obviously, to discuss that and give you some free advice on that if it's going to help you succeed. Remember, you're not in it alone.
Thank you, Paul. You're not in it alone. Both of us be happy to help.
And, Joel, we're running out of time. Goodbye till next week. This is Paul Segretto and my good buddy from Cleveland at the foot of Lake Erie, Joel LaBava, the Franchise King. Take care.
See ya.